Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranexus Universe. It is March 26, 2009. My name is Doug Billy. I'm here with Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. How you doing this evening? And welcome, everybody. Welcome all our friends in Sarasota and everybody's in the chat room. We're so happy to have you with us tonight.
Yes, indeed, always. And a little bit of housekeeping stuff before we get started tonight. We had Brad Steiger scheduled tonight, and he had notified us a couple of days ago that something unavoidable had come up, and we're trying to get him rescheduled. With any luck, we'll have him on next week, and we apologize for that. It just couldn't.
Are you going to tell him the real reason why he's not on the show tonight, Doug? Are you going to fess up?
I thought that was
the audience. Well, I thought, you know, that Tracy comes. We have a guest with a, you know, big show. So, Doug, put it down. Work towards getting your white chip, brother.
You know, I don't even know where that thing is. I'll try to work on the...
Well, we're sorry that Brad can't be with us tonight, you know, but, hey, you know, he wants to be on the show, so we'll get him at a later date.
Yeah. With any luck, we'll hope to hear back from him, and so we'll get him on. He seems to be a really nice guy, and so we appreciate that. So, a couple of things I wanted to announce. Number one, after quite a few months, we finally have the Cypress International Standards for Anomalous Researchers posted on paranexus.org. And so go take a look at those. These are a pretty comprehensive batch of standards and protocols that will serve as a foundation for researchers to use in the development of their own standards and protocols. It's also for Paranexus members. It's also going to be incorporated into the standards and protocols for the Paranexus Certified Field Investigators. And so go take a look at paranexus.org. You'll see them right there. Just look for them, the Cypress standards, and you can download those, and there's some information there. We're kind of excited. I'm happy with this version. We were working on it and got some ideas and for structure and so forth. So anyway, go take a look at the Cypress standards. And I also just today put up a brochure that guests and clients, witnesses can use to log activity, and that will give them some tips on dealing with paranormal activity, not only for ghosts and hauntings, but also for UFO sightings and alien abductions. So that's new to paranexus.org. We are still working on the new registry software. Mike Jones and I are working on that. We're making some headway here, and we're getting close. So stay tuned for that. Some are commenting on the bassy sound on this end. I know that sometimes it does sound a little bassy. I'm not sure what to do about it. I'm not sure if it's a Skype issue or a Blog Talk Radio issue, but I have no way of controlling that. So
hang with us, folks.
Yeah, let me know if it's just really crappy. And if that's the case, we'll try maybe calling back in or something.
At a break, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, so, all right, tonight we're going to talk about two different topics. We're going to talk about screening new members, and we're going to talk about dealing with difficult members. Now, this is stuff that happens to every group. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. It's happened to to our group, Spirit Team, we had our share, and other groups I know for a fact had to deal with different team member issues. So what I'm going to do, this program is really for founders and directors of groups, but there's also information that can be utilized by just basic members too, not necessarily in a directive or team lead type of position. Some of this, basically this information is coming from the new Certified Leading Paranormal Investigator course. There's an entire chapter on this topic, and there's a ton of information in the screening chapter. So I'm going to try to relate a few nuggets to you, and then there's also a lot of information on dealing with difficult members, because they will come up from time to time. It's just human nature.
Yeah, so. And it may not be a confrontational sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It may be something at a total different, coming at you at a different angle that you don't suspect is going to happen. And we'll paint some pictures down the road here tonight to give you some idea of some of the things we've encountered and also how we dealt with them at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I know that we have some who've taken the CLPI course that are in the chat room. So if you've got questions, you want clarification, don't hesitate. Ask questions in the chat, or you can call us and talk live. The number is 347-945-7799. I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. So there you have it. I'm looking at our volume. I'm not sure which end. Is it both of us that are too loud, or just others? If somebody could let us know, we'll see what we can do. I will try to adjust a little bit. All right, folks, let's get into it. Let's talk about screening members, and I'll wait for any feedback from y'all on the volume. All right. Let's talk at the very beginning of this whole thing about membership considerations. When you're starting a group, or you've got a group, you know, a newer group, it's really a thrill to get people interested in joining your group. I know it was for me. It was really thrilling that people were interested, and so, you know, it's like, okay, if you can fog a mirror, I'll take you. It's almost my attitude. And so, you know, I wasn't too discriminating in the beginning, and of course, I paid for that. I knew at the time that, yes, I probably should be a little more discriminating here, but, you know, I want to get this thing going, so we'll see how it works here. So, anyway, but I was fortunate. I got a lot of good members. I mean, I remember starting the Spirit Team, gosh, in December of 2005, and it was about 4 or 5 months before I had anybody who expressed interest in joining my group. Prior to that, it was just my wife, Tracy, and I. We were doing investigations, and it was interesting, but, you know, I was trying to build a nice group. So we ended up getting some members over the coming months, and I remember doing a presentation in where the hell did I do the presentation, Grant?
Bartow.
Yeah, Bartow, Florida. I have CRS bad. And that's where I met several people that later joined, or pretty quickly later joined the Spirit Team. Now, Grant had contacted me prior to that. I did meet him for the first time in Bartow at that presentation, but you'd contacted me prior to that independently. And so we met there, and Gregory Kent, many of you maybe know him. He's Repair Nexus, also on the Research Foundation, and a great friend of ours. I met him there. We all met there. And so I got some members there and started a new chapter as well from that presentation. As time went on, we started getting more members and more members. It just kind of snowballs. You start getting people. And that's when I really began to give serious consideration to screening members, because, you know, the way it goes, folks, is people watch TV. They watch Ghost Hunters. They watch Paranormal State. They watch all these shows, and they think, oh, that would be so cool. And so they look around for somebody to join, and they're all they all think it's all this really exciting, dramatic thing. And once you get doing it, you quickly find out that it's nothing like what the TV shows show. And
it can be pretty darn boring at times. And it's, you know, and a lot of folks just can't handle the monotony of doing a real thorough investigation because they've been conditioned to believe that they're going to go to a site and it's going to be like Hollywood. They're going to be pinched, touched, slapped. Things are going to go flying around in the room. And, you know, I've yet to see that. I haven't discounted it can't happen, but I've yet to see it. And I'm open to the experience. But that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. In fact, an awful lot of what you presumably see on TV does not happen in the real world of paranormal investigation. So.
And, of course, when you do, Doug, that makes it that much more special.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when all the times for the groups that are out there are forming, for all the times that you've gone through all the monotony, you may get 30 seconds or less of something that may really be paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when all of your training and all of your documentation skills and all of your group skills and your people skills and your team member skills are all going to be extremely important.
Exactly. All right, so let's start. Number one, when you're trying to build a team, this is probably some of the most important things right here. Number one, do not invite anybody and everybody to join your team. There are reasons why. Number one, you should never take too many people on an investigation, ever, ever, ever. You go to a residence, an apartment, or just a typical house residence, you don't want any more than is absolutely necessary to be there, and we recommend the fewer, the better. And I'm talking 4 to 6, absolutely top, max. Do not take anybody to an investigation that you don't have to take. In fact, everybody on an investigation should be there for a specific reason. I mean, how many times have we heard, and even there's been a time or two it's happened in our group, where too many people went, and it just kills the energy. It just convolutes it.
Well, that was one of the interesting things about Spirit Team's evolution was we got to the point where we had so many team members that were rotating in and off, or on and off the team, that when and that we wanted to participate in investigations, that it just got to the point where, you know, the core members started going, this is counterproductive
mm-hmm.
to collecting any real data. It's funny how, you know, you want to go out and initially and collect a lot of data. And I think each group has to go through that individually. But, you know, I think you'll eventually come to the same conclusion we have about having smaller teams.
Yeah.
Smaller teams.
I've heard horror stories where 25 people were in a house, 16 people were in a house. And we're not talking mansions here. We're talking a typical house. So that's obviously way too many. The next point that you need to figure out is, what are your membership requirements? How old do people need to be to join your group? You need to figure these things out. If you take the CLPI course, the leadership course, it's going to go through all this, and there's some suggestions in there. Some of the things that I learned is, number one, you got to be 21. And frankly, a little bit older the better. That's just for stability. All members need a car. I mean, that sounds like a pretty academic thing, but you'd be surprised. I've had people who wanted to join who had no means of transportation. They got to have a car. They got to have a cell phone. And you can't share the cell phone with somebody else. It's got to be your cell phone. You can't share it. Another thing, they have to have a computer and internet access, preferably cable or DSL, broadband of some sort. And they need to be at least moderately computer literate. They need to know how to get online, upload files, and we will train them on that. And there's always unique approaches to that, which is kind of proprietary. So that's no big deal. As long as they can pick it up, no problem. They need to be dependable and reliable. I mean, how many times have we had people that just didn't show up for an investigation? Or you notify them that we've got one going. Hey, can you make it? You don't hear back from them. So as I teach in all of my courses and in all of my training, lack of communication will kill any relationship. And to me, communication is absolutely the number one most important thing with members. And that's the number one reason why members left the Spirit Team. Either they left by choice or I helped them leave because of a lack of communication. I dismissed them.
Well, you know, Doug, when I first joined the team, one of the things that I liked best was that you had to write a little short synopsis about who you are and why you wanted to join the team. And if any of you folks out in the audience ever work with the public, if you get that information from people, it's quite revealing. Yeah. A lot of times there's people that, you know, really don't know how to put a sentence together. Now, that doesn't necessarily disqualify them, but, you know, you're going to wonder about that person's ability to do a report. And I always thought that was a good initial screening tool to see what you're dealing with and what the motivation is. Because let's assume that your group is not partial to having or you're going to take a more scientific leaning. So you may be shying away from people who are into channeling and angels and some of that stuff might, you know, scare you away. So, you know, folks have a tendency, some people have a tendency to start rattling on about what their position is within the second paragraph on some of those. Wouldn't you agree, Doug? Mm-hmm. And you can get a pretty good idea if they start telling you that, you know, they're in touch, they're speaking to 13 angels or they have all those things going on. That might send up a red flag with me, you know. But
definitely.
But I always thought it was a real valuable tool for us.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to highlight that in just a moment as well. Now, just to reiterate, there should be a specific reason for every member on your team. You need to have a good reason. If they're on your team, there needs to be a reason for them to be on your team, not just because I want to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have several members, even more than you need. Because things happen. Not everybody will always be available for an investigation. Some people will move, or they'll just leave for whatever reason. There's abundant reasons there. So you might have members who you're working with and grooming and training and so forth, and things like that. Just make sure that everybody on your team is there for a reason. Now, another thing that I recommend in the CLPI course is to create what I call position descriptions. They're like a job description in the secular world. And they state the title of the position, what the position entails, who they report to, things like that, specific duties, responsibilities, and whatever qualifications are necessary. There's also a couple of other membership considerations that you really need to look at. Number one, will you require your members to be certified, such as with the CPI course, the Certified Paranormal Investigator course? Now, as I've mentioned on this show before, you know, I've taken a lot of flack for that course since I wrote it here about a year and a half ago. You know, some people think, yeah, it's a great idea. Other people think, you know, who are you to be writing it? Well, you know, I'm Doug, and I'm a trainer, and I know this stuff. And so I've only gotten good responses from the course. Now, why should your members be certified? I believe they should be, and I'll tell you why. Not just because I want to sell a course, but here's why. When you certify your members, it has so many benefits. Number one, if you tell prospective applicants that they need to get certified, and they're going to have to spend, you know, $55 anyway to get certified with the course, that's going to filter away the looky-loos. Because if somebody's not willing to invest $55 or more, and it's going to be more once you get equipment figured in, if they're not willing to invest that, then how serious are they about being a researcher, a professional researcher? To me, they're not, if they can't invest in. I mean, look at all these people with hobbies. We've talked about this too. Scuba diving, you know, skydiving, you name it. And they're spending thousands of dollars on their hobby. And so if somebody can't spend a few bucks to get trained properly and certified, then frankly, I don't want them. Here's another advantage of it. If your clients see that you're certified, it's going to enhance the credibility in your client's mind, your credibility in their mind. Now, there is a downside to the certification, and it's not really a downside. It's actually a benefit. if you already have a group, and this has happened several times, and without fail, it happens the same way every time. If you have an established group and you take the CPI course and you say, holy jeepers, Batman, this is great, and I want my members to take it. And so you tell your members, yeah, we're all going to get certified. It's going to polarize your team, and it's going to do it. Some people are going to say, yeah, what a great idea. Other people are going to say, why do we have to get certified? We know this stuff already. And what's going to happen, it's going to end up dividing your team, and you're going to end up losing members. Just bank on it. It's happened way too many times. And you want that. That's exactly what you want, because members who are difficult, members who cannot grow, and who are not willing to further educate themselves, you don't want them on your team. So I recommend that you require people to get certified.
Yeah, if they can't grasp the whole idea behind certification, you know, when Doug and I discussed the course and Doug had it in his mind what he wanted to do, one of the things we talked about was, you know, to get the uniformity. That's the main thing that we wanted. Mm-hmm. We didn't want, you know, we have a philosophy, and we think it's, you know, it's fairly, you know, liberal in the way it approaches this as it tries to approach it as a science. And, you know, there's a lot of folks who are not going to agree with you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not going to agree with that philosophy. But the whole thing is that if they don't, like Doug says, then they're going to be a detriment to the group.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they're
just not going to follow along. And most of those people, if you have a person like that, they don't stick around very long. They don't want to have anything to do with a test or book learning anything. They just want to go out there with a meter in their hand.
Catch ghosts. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I recommend certification. Wherever you get it, and require your members to have it, because it will screen out a lot of looky-loos. All right, let's talk about the application process. This is rather simple. The first step is getting an application. Now, many groups will have the application online, which is fine. You get that application, but require them to basically sell themselves. You know, why should we invite you to join our team? What will you bring to the table? Things like that. And that's where you get your first impression. Now, I can't tell you how many applications I've received that were full of typos, poor writing. I mean, my God, I wouldn't send that to anybody. And I'm thinking, you know, would you do the same thing when you're applying for a job? And I doubt that they might, but the people who would, I don't want them on my team. So I look at the very first thing, the application. How do they express themselves? Are they expressing themselves as a professional? Did they take time to at least put the thing in their word processor and do a spell check? You know, are they writing properly? So many people write in all small letters these days, and it's a bad habit. It's just not proper writing. So I take all that into consideration. Now, if the application looks good initially, then I will contact them, and I will do a phone interview. That's step two. Step one, the application. Step two, a phone interview. And I will talk to him. And I'll get to some questions in just a moment. The third step is, if the phone interview goes well, then I will meet them in person. If at all possible, meet them in person and continue the discussion. See how you fit. And then, of course, the fourth step is either to accept or decline them. That's just a simple application process. So step one, the application. Step two, the phone interview. Step three, in-person interview. And step four, you either accept or decline them. Now, there is a couple of points that I want to bring out. What about people who have been convicted of a crime in the past, or people who have been convicted or arrested for DUIs, driving under the influence? You know, that's your own choice, and I'll tell you my position on it. If they have been convicted for either of those within the last 10 years, they're not joining my team. And I even relax that. I used to say if they had a DUI, no, ever, they were never going to join my team. And that's because I am also an expert on alcoholic relationships, and I have a book out on that. I know about alcoholics. And I also know how hard it is for them to master that or to get on top of that. And so if they've had a DUI, it's a liability issue. Same with a crime. For example, if you don't do a background check and you find, you know, somebody joins your team and they've been arrested for shoplifting or stealing, you're taking these people into somebody's home, and you're essentially taking a risk yourself, and not only that,
you're liable.
Yeah. You're liable, and you're putting them, the client, at risk.
And the reputation of your whole group is on the line as well.
So bear that in mind. Make a good decision. And my position is 10 years, and that's what it is. Now, there is a comment in the chat room. I know my writing sucks, but that does not reflect who I am. It just means it's not my best feature. And that's true, and I appreciate that. And I don't expect everybody to be a top-notch writer when they apply, but I do expect them to put forth a little bit of effort and at least spell check it. That's, you know, at least do that. I mean, if there's a few typos in there, I don't really care much, but if it's just botched up, that's...
Yeah, and the reason why we do that is because let's assume that you or another member of your team witnesses something all at the same time, and you want to be able to document it, even if it's briefly, you all want it to be good documentation.
Right.
That's the keystone here. You got to have that. It doesn't matter if you make spelling errors or whatever. It's just...
We all do.
Learn how to document your observations.
Now, another thing to do is background checks. Now, background checks are just not as straightforward as I would like to see them. There's no one size fits all. There's no one easy link to go to and do it. It's a bit confusing. And in the CLPI course, I give you some links and so forth. At the very least, you should go and make sure that they're not on the sexual offenders list registry. And you can get the National Sexual Offender Registry at familywatchdog.us, familywatchdog.us. There's also state registries. Do some kind of a background check. Now, usually the state will have some way, or even your local police department. I know Dustin Smith says that she can go.
Oh, they usually do it here in Florida, Doug.
And they can go and kind of talk. Yeah, and that's the next
thing. It's a public record, yeah.
Right. If you can search public records in the county. But what I was getting at was some police departments might allow you to do a quick background check for a small fee. Dusty Smith said she pays him like $5 to do a background check. Now, in Florida, you can go to the Florida State Troopers.
Department of Law Enforcement.
Yeah, Law Enforcement, and it's $25 to do a background check. If you do that, and you should do something, you just pass it along to them. That's just another thing that's going to filter the looky-loos. So do background checks. You also need to have a membership agreement, release of liability. Again, that's written out for you in the CLPI course. It's just too lengthy to really go through. Basically, I'll read it to you. By submitting this application to become a member of your group, I attest that all of the information above is truthful and accurate to the best of my knowledge. Furthermore, I acknowledge that I have read and will comply with the group's standards and protocols, shared values. If accepted as a member, I also agree to identify and hold harmless the group, its founders, directors, clients, past or present, any other member, past or present, and any other person for any personal risk or injury associated with performing team functions, research, and investigations. I understand and agree that a confidential background check will be performed. I certify that I act at my own risk, of my own accord, and of my own free will. I understand that the group's standards, protocols, and shared values are updated occasionally and agree to abide by the updates or resign from the team. So that's the disclaimer, and that's what they have to agree to. Now let's talk about the interview. By the way, just a big FYI, I have seen and heard many groups who talk about HIPAA and that we have to hold to HIPAA. And also the EEOC, that is the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And the fact is that in most cases, volunteers are not required, they're not protected.
Yeah, not under EEOC.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the HIPAA does not apply to groups unless you provide health insurance for your team members, which I doubt you do. So those things just don't apply. I've had people say that me asking whether they've been convicted of a crime or have any health issues is a violation of HIPAA. It's not, because HIPAA does not apply. And of course, you want to use discretion when you ask those. Now, here's three interview questions that you need to answer in your own mind before you invite somebody to join your team. And these are nuggets. And I'm really sharing something with you here on this because this is good stuff. The three questions are, can they do the job? Will they do the job? And do they fit my team? Can they do the job? Will they do the job? Do they fit my team? Of those three questions, the most important question of the three is the third one. Do they fit my team? You see, they might be able to do the job and can and will do the job, but do they really fit your team? You need to answer that question. And in the CLPI course, I go into length at how to look at those questions. You need to decide those. Can they do the job? Will they do the job? Do they fit my team? And all of your interviewing questions need to really be directed at answering those three. So that's the long and the short of it. I'm just looking through here. Let me address a question that was in the chat room from Johnny about interviewing and screening a psychic, because I've done that a lot. We've done that a lot. When I interview a psychic that wants to join the team, my biggest question is, are they grounded or are they out in orbit? Now, everybody knows as well as we do that this field attracts, well, can attract some real...
eccentric people.
Thank you, Grant. That was politically correct. I was trying to come up with something other than whack job. It attracts eccentric people and all kinds of beliefs. Some are way out in orbit. Some have no basis in reality. And psychics can fall into that. Now, not all of them are. And I don't want anybody to get the impression that that's what I think, because I don't. I love psychics. We use them all the time. I can't find enough decent psychics. Now, people can be sensitive as well. They can be intuitive. That's fine. That's all part of psychic ability. What I'm really looking for is, are they grounded? Are they balanced? Do they have a good head on their shoulders? Are they able to keep things within reality? And this is one of the things I love about Gregory, who I mentioned earlier, Gregory Kent. You know, great guy, and he knows when it's something to be dealt with, some information he's getting that's true, or something that really shouldn't be dealt with. You know, it's not even applicable. And so look for a person who's grounded. How do they talk? How do they sound? Ask them what their beliefs are about what happens to people when they die. Ask them all about those things. And ask them, how do you go about doing your thing. Now, all psychics, or maybe I should put it this way, not all psychics operate the same way. They all have various gifts and methods in the way that they get information, which is fine. If somebody says they can read people, then I ask them for a reading. And that has worked for me because, I mean, one lady I asked for a reading who wanted to join the team about a year ago, and she decided all of a sudden, after we had such a good relationship, in fact, she'd really already joined, and I'd ask her, hey, can you give me a reading? And she said, sure. She starts reading me and tells me all these things about me that honestly are not true. She then got very upset with me, accused me of being a control freak, and that she couldn't deal with that, and also accused me of violating HIPAA. And, I mean, she changed night and day. I'm thinking, what the hell just happened? I mean, and so that benefited me because she certainly didn't join. I've done the same thing with others, and they have given me a reading, and some of it's accurate, some of it's not. Here's what I do. If I have a good feeling about them, do they fit my team? Remember that question? If I feel good about them, then I invite them to join the team, and I monitor them, and I let them know this. They have to validate themselves. If they're going to claim to be a psychic or have sensitivity that way, they need to validate that on subsequent cases. And so that's exactly what I look for. And it's, I think for the most part, Grant, it's happened, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think that we've been very fortunate with the folks that have joined our group. We've been, you know, we've had some folks that have had some really outstanding psychic abilities. And like you said, Doug, some are different than others. And, but you know what? It's really a nice thing when they are, because then you get a total different perspective sometimes when you're out doing an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, there's similarities. And we strive very hard to try to make sure that our psychics are not contaminated. And there's one thing I would like to say, though, about there's some folks that we've had in the past that have been that we've been affiliated with, where they may indeed have had psychic abilities, but they kind of let their own internal belief system override situations. In a short way of putting it, we had people who saw malevolent spirits everywhere,
mm-hmm.
on investigations, where even if they were not on the premises, but viewing it through a video cam would be telling us that there's a malevolent spirit in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Because we would broadcast certain investigations so other team members could join in, even though they weren't not in the area or couldn't make it, whatever. They could at least see what was going on. And that was another one of the processes of validation, right, Grant? That's why you validate them. You feel good about it and you invite them to join. After that, they have to validate themselves.
Yep.
And they have to, frankly, continually validate themselves, no different than any one of us.
And everybody should be, no matter how long the time frame is, everybody should be willing to place themselves under the microscope. Because what happened, that person that I was talking about initially presented very, very well. Mm. But as time went on, the things that she was reporting and he was reporting were pretty out there, and they were doing one of the foundations of our whole group is in how we conduct our investigations is we model after the healthcare industry, which is do no harm.
Right.
And what happened would be they, by those type of observations on their part from their perspective, they could scare the client sometimes,
mm-hmm.
because in one particular instance, I know you'll recall this, Doug, the psychic was contradicting what we were getting in an investigation, and that psychic wasn't even on site.
Mm-hmm. And she got one of our other members who was on site, who thought he had some sensitivities, to start getting emotionally invested in this whole thing. He was losing his objectivity. And frankly, the client then began to look at him as a psychic, which he was not, and that whole investigation just went to pot.
That was a real learning experience, wasn't it? Because, you know, the thing that was so interesting to folks that are doing investigations, or even if you haven't done any, was that this particular group of people that we were investigating were convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that their home was haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, in the face of logic, they would deny it. They were in flat denial. And when that incident came up between the psychic and that team member who thought he was psychic, he started making facial expressions to them that was relaying messages to them that don't believe what Doug and Grant are saying. There's something going on here. And in his mind, if you recall, Doug, he said that there was a child molester in the house, the spirit of a child molester, and there were two young girls there.
And that was unacceptable. And so we did the best we could to coach them and get them past that, and it was over. So you got to be careful. Do no harm. That's the motto of Paranexus. It's our motto as investigators, do no harm. And there was something else I wanted to just explain. As with any member, the psychic has to continually validate themselves. We all bring things to the table, and in both the CPI course and in the CLP course, and probably in the upcoming UFO course, I talk about relationships. we all bring something to the table. I call it two most important relationship questions. First one is, what do I bring to the table? What do I add? What do I subtract? Second question, what does the other person bring to the table? What do they add? What do they subtract? Now, here's the kicker, and this is worth its weight in diamonds. Anytime somebody takes more than they add, they subtract more than they add, and they're not willing to change, their relationship is over, and I don't care who it's with. Did I mention I don't care who it's with? So we all have to bring something to the table. We all have to add more than we subtract, and that's true in any relationship, whether it's with your spouse, your partner, your friends, your team members, anybody, even at work, same thing. So that's a principle that you can follow, and that's a valid one. It's a big one. So I hope that answers the question on psychics. Just make sure they're grounded and make sure they continually validate themselves. Now, here's some interview red flags. The applicant does not ask meaningful questions. This implies a lack of depth and interest. Now, remember that a lot of the people are going to apply to join your team. They've been watching the shows. They're in it for the drama because that's what these shows are. Television is all about drama. And that's another reason, Grant, that some of the people haven't lasted on our team, and even some psychics, is because the drama, they were so dramatic. Oh, man, I sense a demonic presence here. Oh, my God, I've got to get out of this room. That kind of BS.
Yep.
You know, that is absolute BS.
Well, you know, the other example that comes to mind, Doug, is if you recall, maybe about a year or two ago, we had a young lady who approached us who wanted to go on an investigation. She presented very well, intelligent, bright, articulate, yada, 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 seemed to have all the characteristics we needed. We went to an investigation. We were investigating this really cool old firehouse. I think it was firehouse number 5 mm-hmm. up in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And it was this really gorgeous building that had been built in the 20s, and it had this very large bell tower that the firemen used to hang the canvas hoses up in it. And this young lady came to the investigation, and when she came there, I thought she had come to go spelunking because she had so much equipment on her. You know, she had a head helmet on. I mean, she didn't have a head helmet on, but she had one of those, like, miner's lights on her head. And she was really, you know, moving around the room and asking a lot of questions. And at the time, I thought, well, she's a real go-getter, you know, and she's really excited about this. And then over the course of maybe a month or two, she eventually started a group, or maybe several months, she eventually started a group of her own, went on an investigation, and all of a sudden everybody was seeing ghosts, seeing apparitions. Recall that, Doug?
Yeah.
Which was really a scary thing because, you know,
in a different way.
Yeah, because, you know, this person was seeing and you know, ghosts everywhere, and so were other members of her group. And it wasn't, you know, like your typical stuff. It was kind of out there. And unfortunately, that kind of deteriorated. So there was a member who looked good,
mm-hmm.
presented well at first, but and then was invested in seeing ghosts. She was going to see a ghost.
And she's a nice person.
And yeah, she was. She was a nice person.
These people are often very nice people. But here's the thing, and I should backtrack just a little bit because part of the interview process, that's my interview questions. These are my questions. You can determine your own. Okay. Almost the very first question I ask any applicant when I get them on the phone is, how do you feel about seances? That's the kicker for me because, number one, we do seances. We do them all the time. Table tipping, they're nothing. They're simply a tool in the arsenal, no different than an EMF meter, no different than a digital recorder, a camera. They're a tool. We use them. It's one more tool. And we've gained some information. They've been very exciting. And they're nothing like you see on TV. The TV stuff is just BS. And so the first question I ask them is, how do you feel about seances? Now, I had one very promising gal that was at that Bartow presentation where we talked about earlier, where I met Grant for the first time and Gregory. Very promising. And I asked her that question. She said, oh, I don't know about seances. You know, I mean, that's you know, could bring all kinds of demons and stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, fair enough. And that's about all it went. And I tried to coach her through that a little bit and said, you know, go do some research. You know, separate what you see on TV, what the religions have been telling us, and really look at it from an objective point of view and tell me what you think. And I never heard back from her. But that's, for me, a big thing, because if somebody says, no, I don't do seances, that only tells me one of two things. Number one, they are not coming into this free of preconceived notions, primarily religious, or from the television. And, you know, it's not that we have to do a seance every time. We don't have to. You know, it's just a tool. And I want people who say, yeah, that would be cool. That would be interesting to see. Maybe we'll learn something. I don't know if probably many of our audience are familiar with Hans Holzer. I mean, the guy used a trance medium every time and an audio recorder, a reel-to-reel, you know, one of the old ones. I mean, he's got 100 books out. I've read many of them. All he ever used was a trance medium. And there's some amazing information that he got from that tool, if you will. So that's one of the questions that I asked. Let's talk about a couple of other red flags, and then we want to talk about dealing with difficult members. The first red flag that I'd mentioned was the applicant doesn't ask meaningful questions. The next one, they either talk too much or they interrupt you. I'm looking for good communicators, too, or at least people who have a basic understanding of how communication works. And the way it works is, you know, one person talks for a bit, then they shut up and the other person talks for a bit. Then they shut up, and then it goes back to the first person. So you don't want somebody who talks too much. Now, granted, this can be part of nerves, too. Some people talk a lot when they get nervous. The other side of that coin, another red flag, is the applicant doesn't talk enough. You know, as I've taught in the CLPI course, and I think the CPI, if I talk too much or if I talk too little, I am not a good communicator. You know, somebody who talks too much or doesn't talk enough, neither one of them are good communicators. Here's another one. The applicant shows an interest in everything but really doesn't know much about anything. You know, and it's not that they have to be trained prior to coming, but, you know, what do you think? You know, I ask people, you know, what's your position on this? What do you think it's all about? And if they say, oh, you know, I believe in spirits and all this, and say, okay, why? And they better have a good story. I mean, I tend to believe in them too, but, you know, none of us can prove it. So I'm looking for some objectivity there. Let me look at some of these red flags here that might be worth mentioning here. The applicant is accommodating to an unhealthy degree. How about that one? They accommodate you there. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'll do that. Oh, yeah, not a problem. You know, everything is favorable. It's like a yes man type of thing.
Struggling to maintain consciousness. That would raise a red flag with me.
Yeah, that would do. Yeah, really. All right. Another red flag. The applicant appears too good to be true. Now,
we've had a couple of those.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that they're not. But it's just a red flag. Just take note of it. And then another red flag, you just have a bad feeling about the person. Now, I'm not saying to be judgmental or anything, but, you know, remember the three big questions you have to answer? Can they do the job? Will they do the job? Do they fit my team? Do they fit my team? That's important. And if you have a bad feeling about them, sometimes our gut's telling us something's wrong here, we can't put our finger on it, you know, do yourself a favor and pass, because it will become a problem, you know, soon enough, if there's anything to it. Another couple of quick things I want to kick out before I get into dealing with difficult members is a probationary period. I highly recommend a probationary period. Some groups will use like maybe 90 days or maybe 6 months, something on that order. So do some kind of a probationary period. All right.
And you know what else helps too, Doug, And I think this is kind of intuitive. People will know this. You know, when you get people in the group, maybe somebody's coming in with special skills, or maybe somebody has an educational background or whatever. But you know what the real bottom line is, far as who's going to be a real good team member, is who's going to be willing to wrap up that cable at 3:00 in the morning.
Okay.
And who's going to be willing to carry all that crap back out to the car when you know? Because if you got a team member that as soon as everything's done, they just want a book. Because you know what? there's a lot of work involved in this, mm-hmm. and it's not glamorous like you've alluded to, but by the same token, I've been on investigations where you're rolling stuff up and people are standing around drinking a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. It's a team effort, folks. It's really a team effort. Everybody gets in there and does it. So.
And that goes for setup as well, too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So if you have a team member that doesn't want to do those sort of things, that's a potential red flag.
I agree. All right, let's talk about difficult team members. There are some reasons for poor performance, which Grant was just alluding to. Perhaps they just don't know. And here are about four reasons for poor performance. This is also true in the job, too. They don't know how to do the job. They lack the knowledge to do it. So, you know, how do you fix that? You train them. Maybe they don't know to help or how to do it. So you get somebody to help them to learn. You train them. That's the first one. They don't know how to do the job. The second one is they can't do the job. Now, this relates to aptitude. This simply means they don't have the aptitude to do it. And the only two solutions to this particular area is you put them in a job they can do or you dismiss them from the team. The third reason for poor performance, they're not allowed to do the job, excessive interferences. If you've got a founder or director who is a control freak and who's, you know, trying to do everything themselves, they might interfere with the team member and really not let the team member do their thing. You can't micromanage your people. Train them how to do the job properly and then let them do that job within the parameters that you've established. And I don't mean establish tight parameters. It's true that things do need to be done a certain way at times. I agree with that. But give them some flexibility to do it themselves and to learn how to do it. So allow them to do the job. The fourth reason for poor performance is they won't do the job, and that's an attitude. And the only solution to that is dismissal. You can try to coach them, and if you can coach them and bring them around, that's great. But if they won't respond to it, do yourself a favor and let them go. Dismiss them from the team. Another aspect of dealing with difficult members is progressive discipline. Now, in the secular world, they use progressive discipline, and it's a kind of a generic thing where you get, number one, a verbal warning, secondly, a written notification or warning, third, suspension, and fourth, termination. That's a secular way. I propose a three-strike system in the CLPI course that basically three strikes and you're out. Now, in order to use progressive discipline, you need to have standards and protocols. And your standards and protocols need to outline what will constitute dismissal of a team member. You'll have to figure that out. If they violate your standards and protocols, if they do different things. For example, what if they run from paranormal activity? Now, in my opinion, that's grounds for termination, for dismissal. You run from
it. You get that T-shirt ripped off right in front of everybody.
Well, we don't go that way. But
get over here. We're ripping that T-shirt off your back.
Now, if you're dealing with a landed UFO and the dudes are out there coming at you with whatever, you know, and you want to back up, feel free. But I'm primarily talking about haunting-related stuff. I mean, what are we there for? We're there to find it. And if a person is that afraid, they don't belong on the team. They don't belong on the investigation. Because contrary to what TV will tell you, ghosts can't hurt you. Can they pull your hair? Perhaps. Can they push you? Perhaps. But by and large, they can't harm you. And we've got to get away from that stuff. I still have not heard a legitimate, verifiable story of a spirit literally hurting another person. Now, there is another aspect, and that's PK activity, right? Psychokinesis, and that's usually on the part of a human being that things can move and be thrown about and so forth. So that's that. But use a three-strike system, three strikes and you're out. Another area that you want to address, which I address in the CLPI course, is sexual harassment. You want to have something, some policy in your standards and behavior, standards and protocols. Now, behavioral issues. in order to simplify this, because it's not necessarily a, let me put it this way, it's a rather simple concept, but it's got a lot of parts to it. It's, and I give 16 different techniques that you need to keep in mind when dealing with discipline and dealing with a difficult member. The first one that I'm going to relate here, which is a big one, is respond, don't react. Now, the difference between responding and reacting is when you respond, you think first. When we react, it's like a knee-jerk thing. So somebody says something, we fire it right back at them. That's a reaction. Don't catch the ball. That's the illustration I use. Don't catch the ball. Somebody throws a ball at you, the instinctive thing is to catch it. But when somebody's thrown some disparaging remark or something like that, you don't have to catch it. And there's a real good reason why you don't catch it. It is because you don't have to. Real simple. Somebody says something, you don't have to react to it. Assertive people won't react to it. They will respond to it. So that one thing will help you an awful lot. Don't try to control people unnecessarily. I already talked about that, micromanaging. Hold personal responsibility in high regard. Now, I'm going to put this out in rather direct terms for everybody from a training point of view. I'm not suggesting that you're overly direct or blunt with your people. That's not assertive communication either. But for the purposes of this program and training, I'm going to spell it out like it is in a rather direct way. Here's the way this whole team thing works. We're all essentially on a mission, aren't we? We're trying to uncover the mysteries of life. And we're also trying to discover the impact that these different anomalous phenomena have on the human condition. It's going to tell us more about us by researching this. So that's what we're here for. That's what the team is created for. The team has created standards and protocols so that everybody's on the same page. And it's real simple. I'm looking for people on my team who identify with my philosophy and who want to work together, because I want to build friendships too. Now, if at some point somebody no longer identifies with my philosophy and wants to leave, that's perfectly fine. I respect that. It's not that I'm hurt. I don't need to be hurt. I mean, I've had team members who have left the team and started their own team, and a lot of perhaps founders and directors might be upset over that. I'm not. I look at that as as growth. I look at that as growth on the part of the team member. They want to leave and start their own team. Good for them. More power to them. How can I help you? This is not a frickin' competition. It is a collaboration. It's cooperation. We work together. You know, no, we got to get the egos out of the way. We want to work together. So let them do that. Where was I? Just lost my train of thought. All right, let's move on. I probably made the point. Hold responsibility in high regard. That's where I was leading up to. If you don't no longer want to adhere to the standards and protocols, that is perfectly fine, but you just can't be on my team. That's the long and the short of it, folks. And you don't have to get upset. We don't have to have words. We don't have to fight. If you no longer want to do it, fair enough. I respect that. But at least have the decency to leave and move on. And I'll get somebody here who does want to do it. Real simple. Real simple. So that's kind of the bottom line. And don't forget about the two most important relationship questions that I used earlier. You know, what do I bring to the table here? What do I add? What do I subtract? As a team founder, I need to ask myself that question. Am I bringing something to the table here that's of value? Am I adding more than I'm subtracting? If I'm not, and I need to take a real honest, hard look at me, if I'm subtracting more than I'm taking, I better change, because if I don't, my members are going to leave anyway. Now, the second question, what does this team member bring to the table? If you've got a difficult team member who is belligerent, who's just divisive and causes divisions in your team, you got to ask, what are they bringing to the table? Are they adding more? Or are they subtracting more? And you, if they're subtracting more, then you got to let them go. If they can't be coached. You let him go. So bear those things in mind. Does anybody have any questions in the chat room? Let me check the I've been trying to keep an eye on the phone, the call-in line, but nobody's on there. Apparently, we've got some stuff going on in the chat room here. I haven't been able to keep up with everything, but apparently you guys have been chatting a lot and not listening. This is a cooperation, folks. This is not competitiveness. Everybody has their different points of view. That's fine. You know, let's work together. We've got to get away from this petty stuff. Got to get away from it. I don't even know what to say. I keep preaching this and preaching it.
Well, you know, one of the nice things in the chat room tonight, what folks are chatting about, there's room for everybody at the table.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really nice to see everybody from their different perspectives contributing. And that's what this is all about. You know, you're free to come here and tell us what you think, give us feedback about what we're offering, you know, and take what you like and what you don't like, leave it at the table. You know?
Exactly.
And we're not asking everybody to agree with us. We appreciate everybody's opinion. And, you know, by the same token, we don't expect you to agree with us if you don't like to. And, you know, and same with us.
Yep. And just so I want to be clear about this. I'm not suggesting everybody's not listening. I know most of you are. And I didn't mean that as a broad type of thing. I just know there's a couple that are more into that than they should be listening. Now, let me tell you where I'm coming from with all of this program tonight. This is what I do secularly. This is what I do outside the paranormal world. I coach relationships. I coach all kinds of relationships. I train managers and executives. That's my work. And what I've done is taken all the stuff I've learned and I brought it into the paranormal world because it's needed, especially with groups. So, you know, if you haven't had a chance to take the CLPI course, I highly recommend it. If you want a full-blown leadership course that includes everything I just said and a lot more, check it out. You can't buy a leadership course for $65 anywhere. And not only that, it spills over into your secular work too. All right, so I think we've covered it, at least the points that I wanted to cover tonight about screening members. Just remember, folks, don't let your members divide your attention. In other words, don't let them distract you from what you're in here for or what you're trying to do this for. We're trying to find answers, and we've got to get past these petty differences that we all have at times with groups and with companies and in any human organization. There's going to be some of this stuff. We got to get past that. We can't be distracted from our goal, from our mission. And if there is a team member that is doing that, you got to cut them loose. You've got to let them go.
Yeah, because they'll become like a cancer on the group. But, you know, the other thing too, Doug, is that a lot of times you and I have always taken the high road with members and given them a lot of chances. And, you know, we've had some diamonds in the rough too. And, you know, each group has to go through an evolution. And it's kind of like as a kid, you're on a baseball team. All of a sudden, things will start gelling. And one of the things that happens as a team evolves is you get a core group of people that you know you can count on. That you know, and as a team evolves, their strengths, their feedback gets better and better with the members of the team that they're interacting with. And what you find is you're all in the same wavelength for the most part when it comes to the philosophy about how you're going to approach the investigation.
Yes.
And that's very gratifying for me personally. But also I just think that, you know, all teams will constantly be in a process of evolution. And if you're not evolving, then you're stagnating.
Exactly. If you're not growing, you're dying. And that's entropy, which I also talk about in the CLPI course. So, folks, I hope you've gotten some value out of this. I know that these things that I've talked to you about tonight have really changed our life as far as getting new members, and I've shared with you some valuable relationship principles that you can apply in your entire life. And so that's the whole point of it. Let's grow. Let's work together. If you're not a Paranexus member, we'd sure love to have you on board. We're continually building it. We're trying to get people of like mind to work together, to share. because somebody along the line is going to come up with some great thing that's going to change the whole course of this, the whole face of this thing. And that's what we're looking for. And so come and join us, you know, contribute, be an authority, show us who you are, bring your uniqueness to the table. We want that. We really want that.
Well, you know, John asked a question in the chat room about, you know, how do you react when you're confronted with jokes about what you do in this field? And you know what? With sense of humor.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can react. And you know what? You know, we've been on investigations where people just, like, laughed at us and stuff, and it's like, okay. Or the whole neighborhood comes out because the word spread around that the ghost hunters are coming tonight. And, you know, hey, you know, your group is, you know, the public image of your group is really important. And I think that when you're confronted with somebody that's laughing about it, that's okay. You know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and, you know, you can appreciate that, and, you know.
And I love the quote, which I've mentioned before, what you think of me is none of my business. One of the things that I have to continually tell myself is, don't take yourself too personally, or too seriously, rather. Don't take yourself too seriously. There are going to be people out there who think that we are the wackiest, craziest nut jobs that ever walked. That's perfectly fine. And I'll tell you why it's fine with me, because I really don't care. You know, what I'm doing here, this is no hobby for me. This is my life. This is part of my life's work. And I want to know this for humanity, you know, for not just for myself, but for humanity. I want to know how it affects people, how it impacts the human condition, what role it plays in our entire evolution. That's what I'm looking for. And I don't really care about people who are not enlightened enough or who are not smart enough to even do the research to get educated, to understand, hey, there's something going on here that we just can't explain. So it's something you just don't take yourself too seriously. Let them say, chuckle, joke, whatever they want to do, that's perfectly fine. I'm just happy as snot doing my thing and trying to find answers that one day hopefully will benefit humanity. And that's my approach to it. So anyway, folks, we really appreciate you listening in. And for those of you who joined us mid-show, I just wanted to reiterate that a couple of things I've added to the website. We added the Cypress International Standards to the website. And these are standards that have been in the works for quite a long time. And they're designed to serve as a foundation for you to develop your own standards and protocols. Or if you already have standards and protocols, they're a great overlay. And so take a look at them. Kind of proud of those. I think they're pretty comprehensive, but they also stop short of decisions that I believe that groups should make, you know, independently. So go take a look at those. You'll see them right on the main page, the Cypress International Standards. And I also just added a little brochure that clients and witnesses can download that will allow them to document and log any kind of paranormal activity. So, you know, you can use that if you want to create your own or something like that. Plus, we've got the Paranexus Field Investigator Network. It's on its way. We're working on the new registry software. It's coming along. It shouldn't be long. I know I've been saying that, but we really want to get it to the point where it's functional before we deploy it. So be on the lookout for that in the next, I don't know, not very long. And I'm not talking a month either. So anyway, that having been said, next week we'll have to let you know who our guests will be. As I mentioned at the outset, that Brad Steiger couldn't be with us. He had something come up that he couldn't get out of, and he let us know a couple of days ago. So we are trying to reschedule him, and with any luck, we'll try to have him on next week. But if not, we'll have another interesting program. If you've got ideas that you'd like us to talk about, please let us know. Send an email to admin@paranexus.org. And don't forget to rate the show if you would. Try to get the ratings up and get more folks in here. So,
yeah, and if you want to be a guest on the show too, contact either Doug or I. We'll be happy to talk to you about it.
And that reminds me of something we talked about. If you're a Paranexus paid member and you're the founder of a group and you'd like to come on, we're going to try to schedule up in the future a couple of founders of member groups to come on, and we'll give them a half an hour each, and we'll talk to you about how you approach things, what you think is important, things you found out, something, you know, what burning message do you have that you want to share? So if you're interested,
just to promote your group in your area, you know, because we know that some folks aren't local here to Florida. We know that they're There's folks all throughout the country that do listen from time to time, and even as far as down under, all our friends down there. And we're always open to you coming on the show to discuss how your group approaches it, any tips that you might have. Come on board, you know. We're friendly, you know, we don't bite.
Yeah. And let me reiterate something, too, that's being mentioned in the chat room is the show is scheduled for 90 minutes, but it's actually a one-hour show. The other 30 minutes are for spillover, and we've actually spilled over here a little bit. So, you know, I'm sorry about that, but the show is designed to be about an hour now. We're finding that works a little better with some of our guests and so forth. Anyway, folks, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your comments in the chat room, and we appreciate your passionate belief. Keep an open mind, devoid of preconceived notions, and let's see if we can't find some answers. Until next time, this is Doug Kelly. Hope you have a great week, great night.
Tonight. Hey, have a great weekend, everybody.
Sky, it's Paranex's universe.